looking at the second page, second page. Looking at the top of the page, the characteristics and functions of the major lipoproteins. And you can see here that the trends, as it says here, the trends and in actual density matches the name of the lipoprotein. So here you can see the very low density is basically varies between right at the density of water, a little less, whereas the high density lipoproteins are much more dense than water, would theoretically sink to the bottom. If you take a look, then I love this chart because it confirms the a variety of things. First of all, you see that the physical diameter of the chylomicron, 75 to 100 nanometers, 75 to 1200 nanometers, the HDLs are 7.5 to 10. So they're an order of magnitude, even at the lower end, order of magnitude smaller than the chylomicrons. You can see their intestinal, their origin in the intestine, of course, since it's exogenous, fat transport, it's going to come from the intestine. These others that come from inside. The HDLs and the LDLs are supposed, they say, from the intestine and liver. There are probably more sources than that. And we're primarily, we're interested in sources that are not a part of the digestive tract as well. Adipose tissue and so on is another place where these things can come from. The physiological role, if it's anything but chylomicrons, it's an basically endogenous fat transporter. But if this is an interesting one, they've labeled this as a reverse cholesterol transport. That means it comes from the tissues back to the liver. That's why apparently it has some sort of protective effect on heart plaque, on fatty plaque buildup in the coronary arteries. And then I really like this percent composition here. You see, we'll just go from one extreme to the other. The proteins that tag these things, the protein part of the lipoprotein molecule, is about the same size. In other words, the length of the length of the primary chain is about the same size. It's the relative size of the rest of the chylomicron that varies the proportion here. For example, here you see the percent composition for the chylomicron. It's 86% fat. 86% fat. Only 2% protein by mass. But if you go down here and look at the other extreme, you can see here that it's a much smaller thing. It's only got 5% of its weight is fat or lipid, but 57% of its mass turns out to be that protein. And again, since the proteins are about the same size in all of these things, it just means that this molecule, this structure, this micelle, is so much smaller and has so much less fat associated with it that it then can have that relatively high percentage of protein. And you can see there's almost a direct trend of increasing across that chart. So, the percent composition of lipoprotein proportion is directly related to the density. Recall the origins and the physiological role of each of the plasma lipoproteins. Now, the logic of this particular lecture or this particular handout is the following. We initially examine how the fatty acids get to your intestines or get to the cells. If you recall, they're absorbed. You begin acting on them almost in the mouth as it descends in the stomach. They have these lipases that begin to break them down into the fatty acids and glycerol and glycerin. And then you have the lipoprotein lipase that's in the capillaries that takes that reformed fat, breaks it back down again into fatty acids and are released into the interstitial fluid, and that's where you get absorption into the cells. Now, to be honest, I couldn't tell you if there's a fat transporter on the surface of the cell or if it simply is by diffusion into the cell. Don't know. It's an odd thing that I wouldn't know that, but they just don't talk about it. They just either, I would suspect that it just diffuses into the cell because of the highly polar, nonpolar nature of it. It should pass through the lipid bilayer without too much trouble. In 1904, there was how have we parsed apart what the enzyme breakdown, what the metabolism is of fats? Well, it began in 1904, and they fed dogs labeled fatty acids with that have a specific benzene ring added to the end of the fatty acid tail. The odd chain fatty acids produced hippouric acid, and even chain fatty acids produced phenylacetyuric acid. So here's the odd chain, and it goes on to make this benzoic acid, and this hippouric acid is a glycine added to the benzene ring. And then the even chain, you end up this phenylacetic acid that also had this glycine residue added to the end of it, making it a making it more water soluble. And because there was because odd chain and even chain were metabolized differently, they came to the conclusion that they must be breaking down these fatty acids in units of two rather than units of one. So that's where he came back with the units of two. This is confirmed in the 1950s again, primarily again because the 1950s, after World War II, is where medical researchers were able to use radio labeled carbons, carbon-14, carbon-13, using radioactivity to follow this along. What happens? The very first thing, the very first thing it gets into the cell? Well, it gets activated. And an ATP is bound to it. Here's the fatty acid, there's the ATP. It says, acetyl-adenylate mixed anhydride. There's an enzyme that connects the two, and you end up having a high-energy fatty acid intermediate that then gets connected with coenzyme A, and you get this acetyl-CoA. So this acetyl-CoA is an activated, it's a little higher energy molecule than is the fatty acid. So this then binds, creates this acyl-CoA. So you got the coenzyme A with the long chain fatty acid attached to it. So the CoA kind of becomes a handle. It also, what it does, it eliminates that acidic group right there. It moves from being an acid group to a thioester, and that eliminates any of the pH changes that could come from fatty acids being built up into the cell. So activating it provides, it puts a handle on it, the acetyl group, and also eliminates the acid-base nature of the fatty acid. Okay, now, the fatty acids become high-energy intermediates after their activation by a group of enzymes called acyl-CoA synthetases, each with a particular chain length specificity. It occurs in the cytosol of the cell. The final product is an acyl-CoA compound. Depending on the acyl, just means it's either 12 or 14 or 16 or 18 carbons long. So they just give it the universal term acyl. A hydrolysis of the pyrophosphate drives the reaction to completion, and the cellular fatty acid is now ready to enter the mitochondria for beta oxidation. Because if you recall, oxidation occurs inside the mitochondria. It does not occur inside the mitochondria. Does not occur anywhere else. So, how do you get the stuff into the mitochondria? Turns out that long-chain fatty acids, the CoAs, long-chain acyl-CoAs, can't cross the inner mitochondrial membrane. There's no transporter for it. Turns out there is an acyl-carnitine. There is a small molecule called carnitine that can assist in the transport of these acyl carnitines across the inner mitochondrial membrane. Why not the outer mitochondrial membrane? Because the outer mitochondrial membrane is permeable to everything except hydrogen ions. Okay, so acyl carnitines, this carnitine, for example, if a 16 carbon unit was attached, carnitine, palmitoyl, transferase 1 and 2 exchanges the CoA group for carnitine. The isocarnitines are translocated across the mitochondrial membrane by the carnitine carrier proteins. And you see that here in this. Okay. So, here is the original activated fatty acid, fatty CoA. Carnitine exchanges this, so you get a free CoA, and now you have the acylcarnitine. It transports it in, reforms it back into the acyl-CoA group, and the carnitine is recycled then. The carnitine, as you can see right here, is a very simple molecule. Has lots of, it's got a nice polar charge here. It's very polar, but it, interestingly enough, it attaches to that particular hydroxy group. So this acylcarnitine then has a carrier that pulls it into the mitochondrial matrix. All right, so now it's inside. Within the mitochondria, acyl-CoA is reformed. Carnitine is transferred back to the cytosol. Short chain acyl-CoA is simply diffused across the inner membrane. So short chains, that's like 6, 8, 10 CoAs, acyl-CoAs can move across the inner mitochondrial membrane. Food supplement makers have claimed that carnitine is a fat burner. You can buy fat burner, and it's got carnitine. You get extra carnitine in your diet. Does that make the carnitine a fat burner? What do you think? Fat burner? Don't everybody speak at once. What do you think? Well, that's, of course, that is a liberal, I think that's a hyperbole. That's a, they're making an exaggerated claim. At best, you can claim that it's a fat transporter. But have you ever heard of a disease caused by a lack of carnitine? No, because carnitine is not... is not a vitamin. You don't have to get it from external sources. You make carnitine. So what that means is the only people that might be helped by this would be people who are genetically deficient in carnitine. Now, I don't know what disease that is. I've never heard of it. I'm sure somebody's got it. But that would be the only person that would probably be helped much by having lots of carnitine in their diet, taking extra carnitine in their diet. I would suspect if you're having a well-rounded diet, that extra carnitine will simply make your urine kind of expensive. Okay? Because the carnitine is nicely water-soluble, lots of polar groups and stuff. It's got some nitrogen on it. Probably gets made into some sort of urea and then consumed. Either it gets dumped into your urine or you use it for energy. All right, so much for carnitine and being a fat burner. So you've got now inside the mitochondria. So this is now, this is, if you remember, I asked you to memorize this from the first semester. And this is the this pathway contains my favorite enzyme. I'm in awe of Rubisco, but in terms of the absolute dependency we have on that particular enzyme for life on this planet, but in terms of the chemistry of it, I'm in awe of this particular compound right there. Because I don't know, can you see in your handout, does that indicate that that's got a double bond right here? Can you see that that's a double bond in your handout? Yeah. So, here is a fatty acid attached to a CoA group. We're going to oxidize it. We're going to get energy out of it. We're going to burn it inside the mitochondria using four enzymes. And so, there's the fatty acid. We've got it into the mitochondria, into the matrix, and we're going to oxidize. So, we start acting over this. Acyl-CoA dehydrogenase. And it begins looking at the alpha and beta bond, the bond between the alpha and beta carbons of the fatty acid, fatty acyl-CoA, and it simply takes, in a transform, it removes two hydrogens, with their electrons and makes a double bond. Now, you know, it's 8 o'clock, 8:30 in the morning, you know, so what? That's a simple organic reaction. Except, for those of you who had organic, do you know of any reaction that takes in a single step an alkane and makes it into an alkene? Do you know of any transformation? What? In a single step. In water solution at 37 degrees and 1 atmosphere pressure. I can make an alkene out of an alkane if I beat it with a couple hundred pounds PSI and the right metallic catalyst at a high temperature. They do that all the time down in Texas when they take, they call it cracking. They crack the petroleum and they can make an alkane into an alkene. But I don't know of any reaction that will take in a single step an alkane and make it into an alkene. Not to mention, take that alkane, make it an alkene, make a highly reduced riboflavin, and then that riboflavin eventually ends up in the mitochondrial electron transport system and makes energy as it those electrons get dumped onto oxygen. Wow! Well, this enzyme right here is the key. It's the key for oxidizing fats. And to me, that's just remarkable chemistry, that you take in a single step, you remove two sets of electrons from a single bond, you make it in a double bond, and then can extract energy out of it rather than require energy out of it. At room temperature, or 37 degrees in a water-based solution in 1 atmosphere pressure. That's why I think that enzyme is fairly remarkable. Others would find other enzymes equally remarkable, but I find it this one. Once you got that double bond, however, you know that those that alkane, right, that bond right there is fairly inert. Not much happens to it. But once you can form it in an alkene, you can add water to it, make it a hydroxy, you oxidize it with a dehydrogenase to make NADH, you get a double bond carbonyl group here, double bond carbonyl group here. That carbon becomes susceptible to breakage, and that's what happens. You bring a CoA, you got beta-ketoacyl-CoA thiolase. It breaks it. You make a 2-carbon acetyl-CoA, and now you've made that fatty acyl-CoA 2 carbons shorter, and we start all over again. It just goes chop, 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 chop. Just every 2 carbons. Chop, 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 chop. And every reaction begins with the removal of changing of that single bond into a double bond. All right. Amazing. Then it just chops it up. Any length acyl-CoA can be a reactant for this pathway. Pathway's products are acyl-CoA, FADH2, NADH plus hydrogen ion, and a 2-carbon shorter acyl-CoA. Reaction number 1 is a dehydrogenation reaction. Number 2 is hydration, oxidation, Claisen ester cleavage reaction. And you do this whole thing all over again. This is why we have you make, why you take organic chemistry before you take this class. Basically, biochemistry is applied organic chemistry. All right, so ATP production for 1 fat molecule. Now, a fat molecule, let's just pretend it contains 3 palmitic acids and glycerol as the backbone. Okay, 3 palmitic acid molecules, ATP equivalent total. Each palmitic acid molecule activation takes an ATP and knocks it down to an AMP, so that's basically 2 ATP it uses. 7 rounds of oxidation, each round produces 1 FAD, which is worth 2 ATP, 1 NADH, which is worth 3 ATP, 1 acetyl-CoA, which when you enter into the citric acid cycle makes 3 NADHs, 1 FAD, and 1 GTP, which is an ATP equivalent. Okay, the final round of that ACE, eventually you get that 16 carbon group down to a 2-carbon group, and then you enter that into the system, you get that. I don't have the oxidation for glycerol, but what you can do here. So, you take 1 fat molecule, and you can make 3, just from the fatty acid, the complete oxidation of 3 fatty acids, 387 ATP equivalents for one fat molecule being oxidized, the three fatty acid molecules being oxidized. Now, this number here, this figure 14, 26, just cross that out. That's an incorrect term. That's not appropriate for your current textbook. What I'd like for you to do is, just on your own, while you're studying this, glycerol enters the glycolytic pathway at GAP. On your own, comma, determine the total ATP available from glycerol's complete oxidation. And you should be able to follow that from GAP down into pyruvate, and then pyruvate into the Krebs cycle. Now, do you always only have odd chain fatty acids? I mean, even chain fatty acids? No. Do you always have saturated fatty acids? No. If you are a plant-based food eater, you're going to get lots of odd chain fatty acids. Well, that term a lot is relative to meat eaters. For several years, I did a training seminar for elementary school teachers in rural Nebraska. And a couple of those times, I was up in Valentine, Nebraska, which is appropriate considering this is nearly Valentine's Day. And Valentine, Nebraska is in the sand hills, and all they do in the sand hills is raise beef. And it was so funny to hear these women who are farmers' wives, essentially, talk about what their husbands eat. And more than just one of them said, you know, for supper, I want meat and potatoes, and if you have to make a vegetable, I want green beans. Otherwise, they don't eat anything green. Meat and potatoes. That's it. Now, it's okay. I would think they have a little higher than normal incident of colon cancer, but they probably don't die of heart attacks unless they get older and stop moving. Because you can eat all that fat, and if you burn it off, not a problem. It's the cooking of the meat and the protein, the charred protein that comes from that, that can be a problem. But at any rate, I don't know why I went off on that. Just because odd chain fatty acids show up in vegetable eaters. Yes. Okay. So now what happens is with odd chain fatty acids, that means you've got 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2. It sounds like a pit thing. You break it down in terms of 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, and then the very last one, it has how many carbons on it? If you have a 17 carbon that you're breaking apart, and you start at the carbonyl end, you go 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, and then the last one is you got a 3. You got 3 carbons. You got a 3-carbon acid. It's called propanyl-CoA. That's the odd chain. You have an enzyme called propanyl-CoA carboxylase, which adds a carbon to this to make an S-methylmalonyl-CoA. This methylmalonyl-CoA racemase that changes this into an methylmalonyl-CoA, and then this methylmalonyl-CoA mutase changes it into succinyl-CoA. Let's see if I've got this here. Okay. All right. Look at this. Propanyl-CoA enters the above pathway. Reaction consumes ATP and carbon dioxide. Uses biotin prosthetic group to get carbon onto the substrate to make S-methanyl-CoA. Resembles pyruvate carboxylase reaction. The third reaction is catalyzed by methylmalonyl-CoA mutase. Uses 5' deoxyadenosylcobalamin as a prosthetic group. This is a derivative of. So you want to know where vitamin B12 is used in your body? Right there. Methylmalonyl-CoA mutase. That's vitamin B12. There's like 3 reactions in your body that vitamin B12 is required for. maybe fewer. I don't know. I think there's three reactions in nature that it's required for. This is the one that you're going to be most familiar with. Vitamin B12, methylmalonyl-CoA mutase. Say that aloud with me. Methylmalonyl-CoA mutase. Say it.
Methylmalonyl-CoA mutase.
Mutase. And why am I making you repeat that? Because it's the one enzyme reaction so far that requires what vitamin? Vitamin B12. That's right. And you get very sick if you run out of vitamin B12. Okay, catalyze the carbon. This thing catalyzes the carbon skeleton rearrangement. The second of only two vitamin B12 requiring reactions known, actually there's a third, but I don't know. When I wrote this, there were only two, involves folate metabolism, homocysteine to methionine reaction. Again, this is not the correct reaction, correct figure. You can cross that out. Homocysteine to methionine reaction. And remember the folate metabolism? Remember that? Where folate was a... What does folate do? And you remember all the different oxidation states of folate? What is it for? Folate is a one-carbon carrier. It's a carrier for one-carbon synthetic reactions. When I say carrier, also you can use the word donor. Folic acid, folates, THF, tetrahydrofolate, is one pool for one carbon donations for synthetic reactions, biosynthetic reactions. Anyway, so what this does is vitamin B12 is important for changing this methylmalonyl-CoA, its carbon skeleton, from branched into linear, succinyl-CoA. Now, I wonder where succinyl-CoA then goes to. What pathway contains succinyl-CoA? TCA cycle, that's where it comes in at. So odd chain fatty acids, you remember that? Remember I had you memorize where odd chain fatty acids come in and it pointed at succinyl-CoA? It's right here. And that process is dependent on vitamin B12. Woohoo! All right, so that's what you do with odd chains. And you do that a lot. You do that a lot, especially vegans or anybody that's eating a lot of vegetables. You will live forever. Okay. Now, certain unsaturated fatty acids are double bond, incorrect positions to act as substrate for the beta oxidation pathway. Huh? What? Are you kidding me? What are they talking about? Hello? What is incorrect position? Yes. Notice if you would, where the double bond has to be relative to the carbonyl group. You see where this carbonyl group is here? See where the double bond is? If you start cleaving off an unsaturated fatty acid, it will eventually get to a double bond that's already a part of the molecule, but in the wrong position for it to continue down beta oxidation. So they got to rearrange it. They got to rearrange it. And this is where you discover that bacteria are smarter than humans. All right. So here we go. As you can see here, here's a very common, which one is this? Linoleic acid is a substrate. Let's do the proper problem. Problem number one, double bond is out of position for enol-CoA's hydratase. Solution number one, use an isomerase to move double bond to correct position. So they start moving this, and they start cleaving it, and they get to the point where, notice where that double bond, it's not between the alpha-beta, it's between the beta-gamma. Well, that's not a substrate for beta-oxidation. So there's an enzyme called enol-CoA isomerase. It moves it, switches it. So it's now between alpha-beta, and then it can go on. Okay. And then also what can happen is, you end up now with the situation in which you can have a situation now where the alpha-beta is still correct, but it's conjugated. And that conjugation hinders the activity of the enolase. So there are two enzymes that step in. One of them comes in, and notice NAD what? pH, which indicates biosynthesis. Where do we get NADPH from? That's right, pentose phosphate pathway, or the hexose monophosphate shunt. I always like that term better, but at any rate. And you end up now with, you reduce one of these, it's still out of position, it gets isomerated, it gets an isomerase axon it, and you get it in the right position, you're ready to go on with oxidation. This is what happens in mammalian systems. There's two enzymes with this. The E. coli has a single enzyme that does both activities at once. So here's a bacteria smarter than we are. In other words, it only does one, it only takes one enzyme to do it, whereas we have to use two. Yes?
What do you say came from the
PADPH? Oh, you mean this, NADPH? Yeah, the NADPH is where you get the reducing power to do this. Because the only source, and whenever I say only and always and never, you always put quotes around it, okay? Because as soon as you get to graduate school, they'll say, well, 95 or 99% of the NADPH is made by the pentose phosphate pathway. But recent discoveries have shown that you make NADPH through this obscure. So I never say never, never say always, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, solution to E. coli, a single enzyme accomplished about the same two things. Fascinating stuff, huh? You guys have had breakfast? Had some fat in your breakfast there? Well, now, what is the fate of succinate? Well, obviously it enters the citric acid cycle. Oddly enough, how can I say this? If you remember, I mean, the Krebs cycle is in fact, remember all the materials in that Krebs cycle exist at microscopic amounts. In other words, the entire cycle, the Krebs cycle is thought to be, you could act as a single catalytic black box. There's microscopic amounts of each. So if there is a withdrawal, if there's a withdrawal of materials out of that, the succinate that's made from that odd chain remnant can go in there as an anapleuretic reaction and fill up the citric acid cycle to help it continue. But the problem is that if you add it succinate, if that was the main place where all the odd chain fatty acids entered, there's no net oxidation after succinate. Okay, there's no net oxidation. All the net oxidation occurs with the two carbons coming in from acetyl group. So if you added all the succinate from odd chain fatty acids into the Krebs cycle at succinyl-CoA, you'd eventually have this gargantuan amount of excess succinate and other metabolites in the pathway, and it'd probably, choke it a little bit. So what actually happens is, yes, a microscopic amount of that succinyl-CoA can enter into the pathway, but that's actually not its primary fate if you have metabolic amounts of it, if you're using it for food. What happens is, and let's see here, excess succinate enters TCA through the pyruvate. Now, let's see. Uses an enzyme is an enzyme is used. Oh, I see. All right, what happens is the succinate goes into this TCA cycle, but then eventually ends up becoming malate. And then the malate enzyme, so there's an excess of acetyl-CoA, an excess of fumarate, then you get an excess of malate. That malate is then withdrawn from it to get that excess carbons out of the citric acid cycle and is acted upon by an enzyme called malate enzyme, oddly, malic enzyme, which reduces malate to this form, or oxidizes it to this form. Notice this is another source of NADPH. And creates an oxidized, that's unstable, and carbon dioxide is removed, lost, and that pyruvate then enters into the citric acid cycle, and that's how it gets used. All right, let me do this again just to make sure we know what we're talking about. What do you do with excess malic acid? What do you do with excess succinyl-CoA? It enters into this Krebs cycle temporarily, gets shifted around to where it's malate. Malate gets removed, gets acted upon by an enzyme called malic enzyme, which converts it to this even more oxidized form of malate that's unstable. Carbon dioxide spontaneously departs, and you then have this pyruvate that's left there. Pyruvate then enters in through a pyruvate dehydrogenase enzyme in the mitochondria, and then the carbons are then oxidized that way. All right. Now, what about very long chain fatty acids? 22 carbons are longer. There are enzymes. Those get transported to something known as a peroxisome, and they're very, very long. They're difficult to deal with, and there's an enzyme called acyl-CoA oxidase. It acts on those things. Oxygen acts on it directly, makes peroxides, puts a double bond on there, makes a peroxide. Peroxide is reduced by catalase, underlying catalase. Whenever you have peroxides being formed intentionally, there's always catalase there, which helps immediately remove that highly reactive peroxide from the body. Direct oxidation of fatty acids means that too few ATP peroxidation cycles are produced. But eventually gets knocked down to where it gets down to 18 or 16, and then it enters in regular beta oxidation. Ketone bodies. Ketone bodies in the liver, a major portion of acyl-CoA produced by fatty acid oxidation or glycolysis enters the metabolic pathway that produces soluble forms of fat. Soluble forms of fat. Ketone bodies are basically fat soluble or water-soluble fat. Ketone bodies. They're an important source of energy equivalent in the blood for muscles and for the brain during starvation. So these people who are on Survivor, Survivor Eau Claire or something, you try to survive in Eau Claire, you understand why that's such a tough to do. Any rate, they obviously lose weight. They are, if they don't get any extra treats or whatever, they just begin to truly lose a lot of weight. And they almost go into a starvation mode. And what happens is what fats are there are directly converted into these ketone bodies, which the body can then, with the brain, can use for energy. So the brain is dependent on glucose, but over a 2 or 3 day period of starvation can move from glucose into ketone bodies absorption. So the ketone bodies, you need to memorize what these four are: acetoacetate, acetone, and beta-hydroxybutyrate. Acetone? Are you serious, Dr. Novak? Yes, I am serious. Because acetoacetate can spontaneously and non-enzymatically degrade to form acetone. These three molecules are thought of being as the ketone bodies. Acetoacetate and beta-hydroxybutyrate are the normal ones, and they're the ones that are in the greatest proportion. But a small amount during starvation is made into acetone. The enzymes that do this are the following. You can take acetoacetate and take an enzyme called beta-hydroxybutyrate dehydrogenase and make it into these beta-hydroxybutyrate. So acetoacetate and beta-hydroxybutyrate are all basically water-soluble forms of fat. Now, the question is, how do you make acetoacetate? That's the question. That's what the liver does. Oh, look at that. Production of acetoacetate on the next page. So you take acetyl-CoA plus acetyl-CoA, a thiolase, which makes then acetyl-CoA. You get another two-carbon unit come in, and you get this hydroxymethylglutaryl-CoA synthase, or HMG-CoA synthase, and you make this material called beta-hydroxy-beta-methylglutaryl-CoA, abbreviated HMG-CoA. Anybody recognize HMG-CoA? It's the fundamental precursor for cholesterol synthesis. So HMG-CoA is the fundamental, is the building block, is the fundamental source for carbons for cholesterol biosynthesis. The sum of the molecules, some of the drugs that act to lower cholesterol in your body attack, guess what enzyme? HMG-CoA synthase. So you can say some cholesterol-lowering drugs attack HMG-CoA synthase. Reduce its activity, lowering the amount of beta-hydroxymethylglutaryl HMG-CoA, and you have less cholesterol then. Okay, so this other stuff builds up harmlessly. So there's not, you know, there's never any, there's no free lunch. But what then can happen is this then gets acted upon by this lyase, and you get acetoacetate and then acetyl-CoA, and it starts all over again. And this acetoacetate will spontaneously form acetone at a continuous low percentage, and also through the enzyme that you saw earlier will make the beta-hydroxybutyrate form of the ketone bodies. Now, what happens? So you make it. What happens? Well, it floats in the bloodstream till it gets to the muscles or the brain. The brain then absorbs it, begins to oxidize it back to acetyl-CoA. Succinyl-CoA comes in. You get acetyl-CoA thiolase and breaks it back down into two acetyl-CoAs. So these four carbons quickly broken down into two carbon units and then enter into the citric acid cycle. This is why the brain is so heavily dependent on oxygen. Heavily dependent on oxygen. Your brain uses approximately 20% of all the oxygen you consume in any given instant. Okay? It's pretty much constant. And it's remarkable that while it uses all that oxygen, it's inside a hardened skull. So all that oxygen has to be transported through the arteries here in your neck. You'd think there'd be some sort of plate or some sort of protective covering around the neck, but there isn't. This is why your eyes and your neck are closely related. Because you've got to protect your neck to protect your head. I don't know. I still don't know why we don't have eyes in the back of our heads. You have any idea? I don't even. Makes no sense to me. But at any rate, the fact that we have two allows us to see in stereo, which allows us to do what? Depth. We can tell much more readily what's close and what's far away because we have two eyes rather than one. All right, so a cyclops with a single eye in your head, this monster that the Greeks had, wouldn't live very long. Okay, production of acetone occurs in it's a non-enzymatic decarboxylation. Fatty acid biosynthesis now, ladies and gentlemen. Now, I want you to take a look at this diagram, and I want you to note the differences between oxidation and biosynthesis. This is one of the clearest demonstrations of how the body can separate two very, very, very similar pathways and regulate them separately. Obviously, beta-oxidation and fatty acid biosynthesis don't need to be turned on at the same time. The crucial thing here is location. The beta-oxidation occurs where? Right. Biosynthesis occurs where? Exactly. All right. And let's see if I can see this. Let's see here. Occurs in one of the things that you use here. The beta oxidation, the CoA is the group carrier. Here is an ACP is the carrier. Now, ACP stands for acyl carrier protein. A-C-Y-L, carrier protein. A-C-P. Acyl group carriers, A-C-P. So that also separates the two, oxidation and biosynthesis. FAD is an electron source for the oxidation, and ADPH is an electron donor here. You've got an L-beta-hydroxyl group here, and on the other side, in biosynthesis, you don't have an L-beta, you've got a what? D. The stereochemistry of an intermediate is different. You've got NADH electron acceptor here, NADPH electron donor here. Two carbon unit is the product. Your carbon unit is the donor. So there's several different reasons why the how the two are separated in the mechanism. So you have physical location, carrier molecule, electron carrier, stereoform of intermediate electron carrier, products and initial reactants are, in fact, unique. I still have 2 minutes, 3 minutes, full value for your tuition dollar here, ladies and gentlemen. All right. Now, acetyl-CoA produced in the mitochondria must be transported out of the mitochondria to participate in fatty acid biosynthesis. In other words, it's a bit of an odd thing. There's a lot of transport going on. So you got glycolysis in the cytosol, makes pyruvate. Pyruvate enters into the mitochondria. The pyruvate then is broken down to acetyl-CoA. But if you've got excess acetyl-CoA, you don't need to oxidize it. You need to make it into fat. Well, the interior of the mitochondria is only for fatty acid oxidation. So they have to take that as the two carbon unit and transport it back out into the cytosol so it can make it be made into fat. Does that make sense? I don't know why it does it that way either, but it does. Because I've been shouting the entire period, haven't I? Yeah. I can tell you that you know, it especially with a freshman, you know, in intro to chem class I have, I'm shouting away, and then I decide to start whispering, and it's amazing. They all wake up. What's he whispering about? I've got a secret to tell you. Whispered like this all the time. Yes, it would be interesting. So what has to happen then is the mitochondria, which has this acetyl-CoA, has to get that stuff out. So guess how it does that? It gets this citrate synthase, makes it into the citrate, moves it out into the cytosol, breaks it down into oxaloacetate and this acetyl-CoA, and then recycles that through pyruvate and back in. So you got this citrate pyruvate transport mechanism, and that's designed simply to get the acetyl-CoA from inside the mitochondria to outside the mitochondria, and then this goes on into fatty acid biosynthesis. Yes.
Is that similar to the citrate knowledge shuttle? Because when you do that, there's like the top.
They're very similar. They're very similar, but they do, in fact, are separate enzymes and have. There's a citrate malate shuttle. You're absolutely right. There's a citrate pyruvate shuttle as well. Does the exact same thing. So the transport of acetyl-CoA in and out, or especially out of the mitochondria, is such an important metabolic function that there's multiple pathways to do it. Okay, well, we'll call it quits there. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. You guys have a great Sabbath. Stay warm. Enjoy.